Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 7, delivered on February 7, 2018. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Today, Annuities and Perpetuities. This is a math-based lecture, but this is like a lot of other things in math. I was a teacher of math at Ohio State, Wright State, and other places for years. And I remember this one refrain students would say, the math is not the hard part, it's setting up the problem that is the hard part in a word problem. Well, this is all pretty much word problems. And I follow with me, I'm going to show you some of the tricks of the trade, and I'm also going to show you the implementation of your calculator to get the through the calculations themselves. Now, my understanding is that in accounting courses, they still have you use tables in the back of the book to get present values and things like that. Is that correct? Are they still doing that? We are not in the Stone Age here. If I can do the math, trust me, and even I am not going to bother with the math of some of these because it does get kind of hairy if you use the formula-based approach where you're actually doing the algebra out. You should do a couple that way, and you'll see me do a few that way as well. But then I just go right to the calculator. That's why the Lord made calculators, so we can be a little dumber than we used to. More to the point, though, we can get work done more efficiently and without some of the mistakes that would be done in typical kinds of manual calculations. And I'm going to use the TI-83 platform to do that in this class. And in this section, again, the math itself isn't that bad. It's just setting up and modeling a problem in the right way. And so you'll see me use an old school technique called the timeline just to lay out what's happening and then visually look at it. Okay, am I looking at a future value or a present value? What do I do in a weird situation like this? Okay, I can break the problem down. The timelines help you with that. Before I do that, though, in my continuing efforts to keep you apprised of the real life of finance and some of the real world of finance, I am going to go to finance.yahoo.com, and we will look at the market, the screen. Oh, okay, fine. You want to see it too? Whatever. Okay. And when you look at this screen, it was a black day on Wall Street here. Why does that thing take that? I turn on a light bulb and it's on right away. You turn on that and it decides if it wants to wake up. Okay. Now, we had a slaughterhouse 2 days in a row, and then yesterday we had two trading days in a row, and then yesterday we had a strong up day. And today, if you look at this, and let me expand it here a little bit for you. Okay, now this one's, I like this one. Madam, good day or bad day or meh. It was somewhat negative, half a point shaved off the Standard Poor's. The Dow was just, that's almost insignificant. Well, that is insignificant, 0.08%. It was pretty much flat for the day. And then you'll see that the NASDAQ took a hit of about almost a full percentage point. So it was a worse day for small companies than it was for good for big companies on it. And the Russell, however, That is completely trivial. That's an insignificant day. Now for the analytics of it. I'm going to show you something here, kind of important. When you are buying stocks, first of all, you should not buy one stock or two stocks. You're going to take on a lot of risk that has no expected reward. You're just begging to get slaughtered doing that kind of stupid stuff. You should build a portfolio. And I'll talk a lot more about this in the coming weeks. The portfolio should have about at least 30 stocks in it. Because when you have that many stocks, they cancel out each other's peculiar noise. And all that's left is the noise of the market itself. That's where you get your expected return, is in that noise that is common to all stocks, based on the beta and the sensitivity of the portfolio to the market. That having been said, building your own portfolio of 30 stocks and remembering 30 different equities, and remembering that you should buy in round lots of 100 shares for each equity issue that you have in your portfolio, that gets expensive. And keeping that portfolio balanced over time, so it's beyond most people's ability. The transactions cost alone would kill you in something like that. That's why we recommend for individual investors and for smaller time investors that they invest in index portfolios. In other words, you buy a portfolio. You buy a piece of a portfolio that's already been balanced, already been well diversified. Instead of trying to do it yourself, buy 30 different stocks and round lots of 100, and then keeping an eye on it all the time to make sure it stays balanced and all that, get into an index. Now, the two ways that you can get indexing are through mutual funds and through ETFs that track indexes. What I'm going to show you right now is an ETF. It is a stock that it represents a pile of stocks. In fact, the one I'm going to show you is a stock that is actually the S&P 500 index. So in other words, when you buy this stock, you are buying the action on the Standard & Poor's 500. If you tried to do that yourself, it would be cost a fortune. But these things are actually... This is an ETF, and I'll show you about mutual funds here, SPY. This is the spider. This is more or less the Standard & Poor's 500. You buy a share of it for $267 today. Will you quit with that bouncy screen? About $267.67. Now, that's a pretty rich. Around a lot of those is going to cost set you back. But at the same time, once you have it, the management of this spider is constantly keeping it tracking the S&P 500, balancing the portfolio day in, day out on your behalf. And there are other ones that track other portfolios as well. You can choose from these. As a matter of fact, you could buy a couple of ETFs and have a super diversified portfolio. Set yourself up, and then you let it run. This one will haul with the market. Now, you can see the Standard & Poor's 500 had a bad day. It took a shot. And notice, see that again? See that drop there? That worries me for tomorrow. We'll see what the overnight trading is like. But there at the end, the sell-off was so strong that even... you could see there was a fight between the bears and the bulls all day long, and the bears slowly won. The bulls came back with a surge here at the end, but then the bears just slapped the crap out of everything at the end. And that worries me, because that's not just one stock. That is an index of the Standard & Poor's 500 you're looking at. And you can actually have that index yourself, if you wish. So there is one, and here's another secret, too. Dirty secret. Back in the day when I was with the one finance club here at ISU, what am I thinking? The one club here at ISU, we have these portfolio managers come in, more or less a smaller time from Peoria, Chicago, and or Bloomington, and they talk about, oh, we're watching stocks and bonds all the time, deciding which to put in the portfolios for our wealth management clients and all that. And so we had this chance to have these people talk to us. And I just sat there as they talked about all this work they do, and I thought, bull crap. They're indexers. Almost all of them are indexers. In other words, they're buying these, and then they're pretending they're doing a lot of work, commissions type of, and claiming commissions. They're not. They're buying these indexes that you can do on your own. And yet they claim, well, we do all these analytics behind the scene and all of that. No, you don't. You're indexers. You just buy these index portfolios, and then you let the boys on Wall Street and the ladies do the work there, while you sit back and once in a while you'll tweak, we'll buy a little more spider and we'll sell a little of this mutual fund and all that. But that's not what they're doing. I mean, they're collecting their commissions for having the Wall Street boys do the heavy lifting of their wealth management clients. That's a dirty secret of the industry. I mean, even if I would do it too, why would I go to the trouble and the extraordinary expense of tracking portfolios, balancing them day in and day out, racking up large commissions that I would have to that I'd have to pay to the traders when I could have these? Okay, little secret. Don't think these guys are magicians if they're in these banks or in these little houses. They're indexing just like the rest of us do. Another one, and oh, my memory is, this is an equity index. Obviously, this is stocks. Oh, God, I'm trying to remember the name. It's the most important one of all. My mind. Okay, I hate this. The aggregate bond index. What is the thing's trading symbol? Come on. Beware of bond index. Oh, shut up. Barclays, come on. What's the one I want? Munis, no. I give up. There's one that is bonds. Now, here's the thing, and I'll get to the lecture here right after this. A smart investor, and you will be investors, most of you will be, you do this trick, and there's a term in here I want you to keep in, get in your notes, very important. It's an important trick. When you are creating a portfolio for your family, for yourself, or even if you're in a company and you have some responsibility for this, you actually should buy three indexes. Three. One of them would be an equities index. That's your aggressive portfolio. One of them is a bond index. That's your defensive portfolio. Then there's also the cash index, which is your, oh God, the world is going to end. So the way you play it is you keep these three indexes as the three components of your portfolio. Now, when I say cash, I don't mean money. The term cash in finance, in business, generally refers to an extraordinarily low-risk portfolio. Typically, it is a portfolio of treasury bills. That can, because they are highly liquid, they can be turned into actual money cash very quickly. Now, in let's say we got a boom, a bust, and an OMG economy. Okay? Now, in the boom economy, you would probably lean into the equities at maybe about 70%. In the bonds, about 25%, and into the cash. Now, these are not, I'm not telling you what to do. This is just a rule of thumb, one that I did in my time. And that way, You are riding the boom because the equities are going to do well. The bonds are there just so that you have some baseline of lower risk securities. And then the cash is there, well, just because actually you might want to cash out some. Some of these funds and some of these accounts that you can set up with a broker, they'll actually let you write something that's like a check on your cash position. It's not a real check. It's called a negotiable order of withdrawal account. But, I mean, if you really needed money fast, you could write a check, one of these things, to get some money quickly out of your account. And also, typically, if you are bailing from one account, what will often happen is that, let's say you drop your equity position to 65%, the money from the sale of the stocks and that would go into the cash account until you shuttled it back here into the bonds, okay? The cash account is almost like a repository in that way. In a bust economy, you're probably going to pull back to maybe 40%, 55%, and this, you could go as low as 30% on this one. And I'm sorry, 50%. And then you're going to boost your cash position to 10%. Do you see how you're becoming more defensive in the position as in this kind of an environment? And like I said, you might even pull back to 30%. I don't recommend that you go crazy in a bust economy, in a recessionary economy. Yeah, you're going to take some losses in the equity position, but those will be balanced by gains in the bonds. And you'll also gain some in your treasury position because you're going to get some more out of it. Okay, the really dark position where it's a real serious recession, this is where you would probably pull back to 20%, and then you would go here to about 65%, and you put your cash position to 15%. So essentially what I'm talking about here is not running around trading every day. I'm talking about thoughtful rebalancing of your net position, your total position, with the ups and downs of the economy. And this requires that you don't lose your cool and say, oh my God. It just tells you that, okay, as my education and my experience tell me, I think that I am going to begin the process in an economy like this of moving toward the bust position. Not all at once necessarily. You might do it in a couple of steps over two or three quarters. But then as time goes on, you have rebalanced. This is responsible investing. This isn't, I'm going to go and buy a share of stock on Robinhood and all that kind of childish stuff. You're doing it the right way. You're doing it as professionals, which is what you folks are about to become. And this is responsible, and when you're managing for a family, not just now, but a family that would be there in the future. And over time, if you just follow this pattern, quarter by quarter, year by year, over years, you will make a lot of money over a lifetime. And that's one of the things about financial planning. Our big problem is people not staying with the discipline of a managed portfolio like this. They decide, oh, well, I decided I want a brand new car or something like that, even though it's not the time when we plan for that. Or, well, we deserve a vacation in Europe. Those are the kind of things we can plan for way out there. But if you start doing those kinds of things, spur of the moment and all of that, we can't help you anymore. You're just going to become one of those people who is eating cat food in your old age. And there's going to be a lot of people like that in the next 20 to 30 years. Don't you be one of them when you get to 40 years. Just, and again, I am not telling you these are your numbers. You have to decide for yourself. And you also have to decide for yourself when it's time to get out of the market, move your position, rebalance toward the defense and away from the aggressive. That's your call based on your experience and what you hear from people you respect. And that means that you're not listening to people on Financial News Network and idiotic sites like that. I'll talk more about ETFs and mutual funds in a subsequent lecture. But right now, let me get to the point, to the process of showing you annuities and perpetuities. First things first, we're going to pull up the TI calculator. Annuities and perpetuities. Now, when you have your calculator up on the screen, the first thing you do is you look in the upper right-hand corner. If you see a button that says no, that means you've got your calculator upside down. Turn it over. I'm waiting for you to... Really? That's calculator humor. Confounded. Okay. Okay, now... And you can use a... This is emulator is a TI-83 Plus. You can use a TI-84. And some of you, someone actually asked me, could I use an Inspire? Oh, that's a nice... are you familiar with Inspire? It's like a super version of the TI-80X calculators. It's got all these wild things on it. TI tried to go out with this, and they piloted it in schools around the country to see if kids would like it. Turned out it wasn't very popular. It was big and bulky. It looked badass, but it was... And so I got one on eBay for like $30 when they unloaded them. And they're still out there, Inspires are. But, I mean, that's if you really want to look butch. A basic TI-83 Plus, and if you don't want to buy one at full price, you can go over to one of the stores like Games. What is that place over there in that? It's not GameStop. It's... Mega Replay? Yeah, maybe it is. I mean, they got stacks of them. As soon as students finish a finance course, they unload those calculators if they don't think they'll ever do anything math ever again in their lives. But just to start off, the algebra is, of course, on the front end. But here is what finance people love. If you click on apps, the first button is finance. And there are all of these little nuggets of joy to do different things. You can calculate the time value of money. You can calculate how much interest you paid on your last payment, how much balance is due at, like, payment 32. You can even find net present value and internal rate of return, which are way too much like work to do manually, especially internal rate of return. I mean, that one's really a pain in the butt. But these are all there available. Now, the one that we'll use today is TVM, Time Value of Money Solver. Now, go in here, and I'm just going to show it to you here for a minute or two, just for a minute, just to point out. N is going to be the total number of periods. So if I told you that you're getting a car loan for 5 years, sir, what would be the N? You get a car loan for 5 years. What's N going to be?
Five?
No. I was waiting for you to say that. That's okay. You got to...
Maybe 10?
No. Madam. That's okay. That's why we're doing this. What is it? Anyone know? It's 60. Because you got monthly payments on a car loan for 5 years. And now you're saying, well, duh. So got to put in the N correctly. Or actually, now, let me turn this light down. It just weirds me when I'm in the dark. I think something creepy is going to happen here. You know, I don't know. Do you know I actually run a RSO that's a ghost hunting club here? Seriously. So there, yes, this place does have haunted places in it. So when the lights go down, I'm a little touchy to it, especially after one incident in a building here. There's a video, I think on my Twitter account, I actually showed a still from a video in one of the buildings here. I was standing there just talking, you know, maybe I can get a voice or something. There was something emerging right beside me, and then it faded out. If I'd known it, I would have gone like Scooby-Doo, blah, out of the building. Okay. I percent. Suppose that the loan is a 6% APR. What do you put in for the I percent?
0.06.
No. Actually, okay, first of all,
In algebra, in math, you always convert a percentage to a decimal, right? Am I right? The thing is, on financial calculators, if it's a financial app, you put it in as the percentage. Okay, I even make the mistake of putting in 0.06 sometimes, but in there you would put in 6%, just a 6. Don't ever forget that. In the algebra, you have to do the decimal. In the finance apps, you always put in a percent, but it isn't 6. It's actually 0.5 because they're monthly payments, so the 6% would be divided by 12. Okay? Now, in the way I do this, I just go full into a problem. Let's say that, sir, you need to buy your dream car. That's right. You're going to buy yourself one of those cars like a Miev or the one Nissan, the Soul. You know, what happens if you have an accident? Have you destroyed your soul? You know, and speaking of the Miev, don't they recall for ugly? I thought they did. But anyway, that's just me. Okay, so you got your dream car. This is how you're going to attract, friends and all that kind of stuff. Now, that car, you're going to have to get a loan for the full amount of it. Let's say that you're going to splurge. You're going to get a $14,000 one with all the bells and whistles, you know, maybe the fuzzy driver's wheel and all that. Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is push in for the N 60. Now, by the way, if I don't want to calculate, okay, it's 5 years times 12 months, and then just toggle down. Don't hit enter, just toggle down, really? N is 60, the number of periods of the instrument. So it's 5 years times 12 months if you don't want to do the math. And sometimes you shouldn't try to do the math because if you've got an odd percentage dividing by 12, so in the I percent, we said it was a 6% loan, so I would just key in 6 divided by 12 and then hit the down button. Don't do an enter, just toggle down with that key right there, okay? So now, PV, that is present value. That is the loan amount. Think of it as in this kind of terminology. I hear people who do these kinds of things for a living, you know, loan originations for cars, they call it the price value, which is okay. And in this case, always, and please don't forget this, calculators want a negative sign. Now, on normal calculators, there's a pos neg that you have to use. Don't use a minus sign. On this calculator, it's a negative. PVs always go in as negatives. I am forever forgetting to do that. And then I'm sorry. You have to put it in as a negative. And if you're calculating a PV, it will come out as a negative. That doesn't mean it really is a negative. It's just that's ever since these financial calculators started being built in the early 1980s, they always want PV as a negative. It's just their thing. I never quite got why that was, but we're going to put in $14,000, okay? Now, we want to know the payment, so we'll leave that alone for now. FV is the face value. That's what would be left at the end of the loan you'd have to pay off as a balloon. We don't need to do that here. If you're doing a car lease, yeah, you would probably do that. You know how at the end of a lease you can buy the car for a certain amount of money? You would have that there, but in normal loans, okay, we don't do that. Now leave these things alone, one and one. Here's the one you've got to watch out for. Normally, for almost any loan, the payments are at the end of each period. You get a loan, first payment is due in a month, not immediately. There are some circumstances. In other words, what we're talking about here is what we call an ordinary annuity. An ordinary annuity is an annuity where the payments are at the end of each period. An ordinary annuity is an annuity where the payments are at the end of each period. The other one, when the payments are due at the beginning of each period, that's called an annuity due. An annuity due. Now, almost no normal loan is an annuity due. They're ordinary annuities. Where you would most likely see an annuity due?
Rent.
Yeah. I'm impressed. Give her a cookie. I got...
You just gave it away.
Dang. You didn't even give one to me. Okay, there's another one. Imagine this. You, sir, have had a friend say something that shocked the hell out of you. It changed your life. It moved you to another dimension of consciousness. Indeed, you went to a happy place. That friend said, "I'm going to have your baby." Right? Trust me. I mean, you know, I didn't have any razor blades, so I couldn't take that solution for myself. But when the baby is born, you commit yourself. I am going to see this child go to college. And it's going to be a quality college. So I'm going to put away money every year. From now until the child is 17, and then that whole pile will ride to 18, and then I'll give it to them to pay for tuition. That would be an annuity due, because you're doing the first payment immediately, and then the last payment rides out. You follow me on that? That is the other one. Your example of rent is absolutely on target, though. Most rental agencies require that you make your first rent payment up front. So then there is an annuity due. So keep that in mind. By the way, an annuity is just a stream of payments. An annuity is just a stream of payments. Now that's as opposed to when I talk about a lump sum, that's just one plop of money. That's like an annuity with one period, one payment. But an annuity is just a stream of payments. Now, if I say a regular annuity, I'm talking about one where the payments occur at regular intervals. Regular means regular intervals. Most annuities are like that, or we model them like that. So, for example, when companies are working with their projections for cash flow, they would model it, okay, month to month, or quarter to quarter, or year to year. Even though that's not how money really comes in, we model it that way as a regular annuity, because that way it's easier for us. The formula is much, much cleaner that way. And it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. Another one, level annuity. A level annuity is where all of the payments are the same amount. A level annuity. And those are a joy to us. Fortunately, loans are level annuities. Bond coupons are level annuities. Unfortunately, sometimes annuities are not level. And there's where you have to start playing with tricks that go back to like junior high school. Do you remember something called Venn diagrams? That dark tie, the weird things. There's a weird version of that we use in finance to reshape cash flows so that we turn a weird cash flow that's not level into a combination of level cash flows. I'll show that to you in a little bit here. But that calculator turned off. Did you see that? Why does the calculator on the computer turn off like a regular TI? No, think about it, noobs. Why did that turn off? Yeah, use the battery up. Really? No, do you see that? It turned itself off because it was saving battery. Okay. It's the small things that keep me alive by annoying me. Okay, now, go back up to payment and hit alpha, the green button, alpha, and then the solve. That's on the enter. Well, look at that. We know our payments now. $270.66. So you know what the payments would be on it. This is something that empowers you to be able to foresee what your payments would be. Now, let me show you a variation on that. Let me show you a variation. You're thinking about, I want to buy a car. You want to buy a car, madam. Okay. Now, you know that the bank that would finance you is going to want you to have a payment no bigger than 25% of your disposable income after you've paid your other bills. So you think, I am making my disposable income. Well, I got my figure, my take-home pay, and then the bills come out of it that they'd ask me about at the bank. And is there some reason that sucks? Oh, this thing fell off it. How does that happen? What, do they have King Kong? Anyway, okay, you figure that after you've paid all your bills, you have about $2,000 disposable income. Okay, so the bank's going to want you to have a payment no more than $500 a month. 2,000 times 0.25. Watch this. I can go in and I can now do this. And this is quite practical. I'm going to go up here and I'm going to say, all right, on the payment, I'm going to put in $500. And now go up and calculate what I can get for a loan. Alpha solve, I put it on the price value, the cursor, alpha solve. I can get a 25 grand car. Now, this is practical because you can then walk into the dealership and say, this is what I want, and this is the limit of what the price can be. Are we in business? Well, he's got a list price on it of $28,000. You say, okay, I can't buy it because this is my payment right here that is the threshold payment. I have to have the loan come in at less than this price, at this amount, or I won't buy your car. Watch him, first of all, he'll dance around, then he'll figure out how to do the discounts to get you where you want to be. This is the practical side of this kind of stuff. This is, by the way, this is consumer finance. And I have a club that I'm running now that's going out into schools, junior highs and senior highs, and we're teaching this kind of stuff, management of your money, saving, where you invest money, and also to some basics of how you calculate loan price, your loan payments, and how to responsibly manage your money so that you can afford to do this. But anyway, there is one nice little application right there of figuring out, okay, fine. Okay, now, that is an annuity. This is the most practical of all of the annuities because this is the present value. We use the present value of a level regular annuity to calculate loan payments. Now, I'll do one more just so you get the hang of this. Sir, you graduated from Illinois State University with a degree in business, and now you're out there in the real world. You got yourself a job at a Jiffy Lube as an assistant manager on the south side of Memphis. On the weekends, you work as a party clown, and during the evenings, some nights, you also do some entertainment as an Elvis impersonator. Life is good. It's very good for you. You now decide that it's time to find a partner, a mate, and settle down, so you are going to buy a quality double-wide house trailer near your work at Jiffy Lube. Did I mention that you're an assistant manager? Eventually, you will rise to a manager at that Jiffy Lube. Life is good, real good. So you go out there to the trailer park and you see yourself a very nice home and you say, I am going to buy this. And this one comes with an additional lot beside it. And so your total price for this is $150,000. You can go to the bank and you can get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, FRM, at 6.99% APR. Let's see what your payments are. Now, okay. Just follow with me. I'm going to do this one. You just do it like this. Do not open up your accounting book and find the tables in the back. Okay. We're going to have 30 years times 12 months per year. Down. See how it calculates it automatically? Don't hit enter. Just go down. Now the I percent is going to be 6.99 divided by 12. Down. You're going to get the loan for negative, and remember, just always with the price value, $150,000. This is an ordinary annuity. Not an annuity due, so you're going to, your payments will be, everything else is set up properly. It's FV0, P over Y1, C over Y1, PMT, you put on end, and then you just do put your toggle on PMT alpha solve, $996.95 per month. That's all there is to it. It's that fast. I mean, you can do this with the formula if you're, but I mean, I could show you the formula. I don't even show the formula anymore. It's in your book if you're into that, which I am, but I'm not as normal as most people. So there you go, $996.95 a month. There's your payment. That fast, that easy. Let's take it the other way. Madam, you will die someday. It won't be soon. I see you living to about 80 years old. Okay? So, you won't be looking very good at 80, but I should talk, you know, look at me. I'm down there already. I have to hang a pork chop around my neck so my cats will like me at my age. Okay, so, shut up. Okay, now, the bottom line, though, is that what you want to do is you want to create your own retirement account, an IRA and all that kind of stuff. And you figure that you're going to do this, starting, this is your New Year's resolution. You're going to start right away, and right away, you're going to just start shoving $2,000 into the account every year. You're going to put $2,000 into the account. Here's the timeline. One year, 2 years. And so, what are you, about 21? 20, 21? Okay. So that would mean that you're going to stop at year 39, I think that's right. I can never do those numbers very well. At year 39, you're going to put in your last payment, and then at year 40, you're going to collect the block of money. First of all, it's obviously an annuity. It's a flow of cash. Second of all, it is clearly a level annuity because it's the same amount every year. But this one's different from the other ones that I've done. This is an annuity due. Do you see how the first payment occurs immediately? This is more likely to be the case in financial planning kinds of problems. Annuity due, that's where you usually see these showing up the most frequently. Because we tell people, are you ready to commit? Now, this is partly sales. When you're a financial planner, you're most likely not going to be one of those backroom experts doing the portfolio. You're going to be out there selling. And one of the things that you want to do is you want to sell hard and fast. Are you ready to commit? Or have I just wasted my time with you? Do you want to put in, write the check for $2,000 today? Or are you just, or should I just leave now? I want to put the pressure on you to get started now. Part of that's because you put pressure on people to sell them product. But the other thing is, you want to make sure that they are not going to bounce around, find competitors, and talk to them. And you're also going to want to make sure that you get them over their reluctance to become more disciplined savers and investors. So I'm going to make sure that you are committing now. So that's why these will, most often in financial planning, you will see them being annuity due. It starts now. With my visit to your house or your visit to my office, are you ready to write a check to start this process of saving for your future? Okay? So here's the timeline laid out. Now, watch out. I hate the number of years. I'm always screwing up the number of years. But here I'm going to assume that there were actually 40 payments involved. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to come up here. It turned off on me. You saw that. Okay, now this one is only once a year, so it's 40 years, 40 payments, okay? Now we need an interest rate. So we're going to be putting this into a long-term investment, a long-haul investment. So that's probably going to get us a better interest rate. Let's say that we can get a guarantee of 4.5% on our loan, on our investment. We go to a bank, and if you screw up, the bank's going to take a lot of that money away from you. But if you say, and I would be the financial planner who would negotiate with the financial institution. I would say, all right, here's the deal. I got an investor. She's going to put in $2,000 a year for 40 years. And you can probably get some decent return. I mean, interest rates just suck right now. They're going to get stronger, which is good news for savers, but it's going to kill the economy as interest rates begin to push upward. But let's say I can get you 4.5% as long as you stay in the program. If you decide to pull your money out early, I'm going to probably take away almost every penny of interest you earn and then hit you with some fees. You'll come out with less than you put in. So as long as you stay with the program, we're okay here. So I'm going to put in a 4.5% for my interest rate. Now I'm going to zero out the present value because there's no PV. We're not finding a current amount. We're finding a future amount. What's going to be in that account after you have hauled that thing 40 payments and let it ride for one more year, building interest? And my payments are going to be $2,000. Now, in this case, I'm not looking for a present value. I don't want to know what the money is worth now. I'm looking for a future value, the face value of the money, the future. $20,000. I'm always doing that. Okay, now, last thing, come down here. Watch out for the toggle because this is not an ordinary annuity. The toggle is not on end. This is an annuity due, so the toggle is on begin. And now I'm going to go up here and see what I'm going to have for my retirement. Alpha solve. $223,693. And realistically, that is not, in your professional life, $2,000 a year is not going to be bad, but you've got to keep doing it. And so when you retire, $224,000, that's not a spectacular amount of money, but it doesn't suck either. It will buy you, at the age of 60, it'll buy you some quality cat food or dog food to eat. maybe once every 6 months, a vacation day over in Peoria, things like that. But that's really a lot of financial planning. And of course, we do these complex things that to a certain extent blow people away. But really, all we do in those is just set different goals. How much money do you need here for this? How much money do you need here for this? And we just set up a whole series of annuities and then figure out what the total amount they have to write a check to us is for to meet these goals. Okay, we want to buy a house in 5 years. We want to have children in 7 years. We'll have to upgrade the house in 10 years. We want to have a new car every 3 years. We want to plan for the education of 2 children. It's just a series of these, figuring out what the payments are to hit different goals, and then adding up the payments and say, this is what you have to write a check to us every month so that we can have you hit these goals through your lives. And we want to retire at the age of 60. Now, here's the interesting thing. And I'm going to twist this around, and I'm just showing you the different ways the problems could lay out in on your homework, quizzes, and assessments. As you can see, the basic math is kind of a joke. You do have to think about how the problem is structured, though. Now, here's something that could, and I try to aim these at more like realistic. Okay. I'm going to go back to that fine student. Madam, you want to retire at 60. Like that's going to happen. Oh, and you plan to live until you're 80. Okay? So what you want to do is have enough money in the bank when you retire at 60 so that you could have $50,000 a year until you die at the age of 80. And if you don't die at the age of 80, well, you know, we'll deal with that when we get there. Yeah. But here's one of the most important ones, and you can do this now. You have to just model it correctly. First of all, we have to set ourselves up here. At her age, let's say that at the age of 61, we want her to have created an annuity that will provide, and this is where it gets a little hairy. Don't panic. It's not that bad. But you have to lay out, do the timeline. Trust me. It looks like childish, but it really works. Okay. What we're going to do is we want this person to be able to collect, retiring at the age of 60. Let's do it here at 61. $50,000 every year on through to the age of 80. So that would mean that we need enough money here at the age of 60 to create that annuity. So we need the present value of an annuity that we can telescope back to the age of 60. And that amount there will provide the $50,000 annuity forever. And it turned itself off again. Let's say that we can invest money at 5.25% annually. 5.25% annually. We do this part of the problem first, and I'm going to tell you a story about how this has turned into one of the biggest nightmares politically that's going to explode in your lifetimes. But let me do that in just a minute. Okay, what we're looking at here is a 20-year, if I counted that right, 20-year, okay? And it's annual, so I don't have to do any divisions. It's just 5.25. Now, we're going to need the present value. And we're going to say we want payments of $50,000 each There's no future value. There's no ending lump. You're not going to leave any for your relatives. They can go to hell, okay? No, seriously. We can do this so that you can have a legacy at the end. But then again, you're going to be dead. So that's really not your problem, how they live. I shouldn't do that. Yes, I should. Come on, man. Okay, now, if you look at how I modeled this right here, the payments are at the end of every year, okay? So you get your first one at the end of your 60th year. Okay, so I'm going to toggle it to end, and now I'm going to go back and say, okay, how much money do I actually need here to accomplish this? That would be my payment. That would be my present value. Alpha, solve. I'm going to need $610,111 in that account here. What was that? 610.11, 111.13. Rounded to dollars and cents. So in other words, I've got to create an annuity when I am, let's say, 22, that will ride forward each year. I put in enough so that when it lands on the age of 60, that's how much is in it. Okay, do you follow what I'm doing here? This is the basis of how we create essentially a self-created pension plan for people. Because the first thing you need to know is, okay, how much will this person want every year? What's our life expectancy actuarially? That gets us back to the amount we need at the shock front of retirement. So now what we need to do is figure out, okay, from the age of, let's say, 22, at 23, we put in our first payment into this. 24, 25, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, and then it links up here with this one. Okay? So, if we're sitting right here, it's going to be an annuity due, because each payment will occur at the end of every period until the last payment at the age of 60. And then we ride it 1 year into the 61st year, and we just start collecting our $50,000 a year. Again, you just got to think about it. This is where the tough part comes in, the modeling of it. Okay. So, and we're going to do the 5.25% again. I should have kept that up there. 5.25% again, okay? So now we need to know how much we have to put in the bank to pull this trick off. Okay, so how many years is that? 23. Oh, I hate that. How many years from 23 to 60? Really? I'm going to take your word for it. This is the part I hate. I'll tell you what I know, and then I'll tell you where my imbecile comes in. Okay? Okay, now, this is not a present value. This is a future value. We want to know the payment. We're going to leave that alone for now. Now, the future value, it's $610,111.13. Now, technically, I should have carried that all the decimal places. Be careful of that. But here, I mean, it's trivial. And then this one is an annuity due. So now we can go up here, and let's see what the payment has to be every year. You're sitting at the age of 22, and you know that at the end of the year, you have to put in your first payment. I'm actually kind of interested in this one. Alpha. Actually, that's not too bad. You put in $5,395.21. You'll have your goal in 37 years. This is one of the most important in our financial planning tools. It's just saying, all right, we need a certain amount of money at this date, the planned retirement date, so that this person can pull out this much money for 20 years, 30 years, whatever we expect actuarially. And so we tell them, if you can put this much in the bank every year for 37 years into some kind of an IRA or whatever the heck it is, you got your goal. That's how it'll work. So this is essentially not just if you want a career in financial planning, and we do have a great financial planning program here, but we don't call it financial planning. Now we call it wealth management. Excuse me. But it's also good for you in your own lives so that you can start to know how to create goals, how to set goals for yourself so that you can achieve things down the road in your life. Now, I'm going to tell you a quick story here where this plays out in a real-world situation that is going to explode in your faces within the next 10 years. We know it's going to happen, and we talk about it, you know, like laughing past the graveyard in finance meetings and stuff like that. It's a pension fund crisis. Pretty much any pension fund you want to talk about, whether it's a state pension fund or a pension fund through some company, is going to finally fess up to the fact that they are insolvent. They don't have enough money to make the pension payments that they promised that they would make to retirees. Essentially, what we're talking about are defined benefit plans. In other words, when you start to work for this company, ma'am, my company, part of your employment package is that as long as you stay with us or stay with a plan that is within our framework, if you go to another company, we will make sure that you are paid a certain amount of money every month at your retirement in so many years. That's called a defined benefit plan. Okay. The problem with this was that almost every pension plan has this horrible mistake in it. Illinois is a very good example, but they are just the whipping boy for what is a problem everywhere. Here's what happens is that, okay, we're good with knowing the defined benefit, how much we need to know at the time of retirement. Am I right? We know that. Okay. We say, all right, this is the defined benefit. Actuarially, this person will live for 20 years, 30 years. And so we telescope that back to a present value. This is the target that this person has to contribute over this person's work life, right here. That's the easy part. We promised you a payment of a certain amount for a certain number of years, assuming. And so we got them out. We need to have in your name in our pension fund at this point in the future. The problem was this, that if you think about it, pension funds, by the rules, must invest in safe securities. They can't take abnormal risk because they're investing people's money in something that's very long term. But with safety comes low expected return. The lower the risk, the lower the expected return. So there's only so far that the interest, the percentage can be for the investments that the pension fund makes on your behalf. Well, the way they worked it out was that they have to invest money. The best you can do in a long-term safe account might be 3% over a long period of time, realistically. Might be 3%. So that would mean that the payments would have to be higher because it's a lower return on each payment that goes in. What the pension funds do is that they calculate how much you contribute based upon an interest rate of 8%. Let me show you what that does. Suppose that we calculate the amount of each payment based upon 8% per year. Alpha, solve. Lower payments into the pension fund. Your contribution would be lower. Now, in order to hit the FV, but look what they should have put in. If instead of assuming 8% return on the investments of your pension payments, your payments going in, they had been realistic and put the 3% in. Let's see what the payments would have been if it had been 3%. Alpha solve. Holy cow. These pension funds were essentially collecting maybe $3,000 from you every year when they should have been collecting almost probably about $9,000, a third of what they would have to have collected to hit that target right there. So at 3%, if we say $3,000 instead of the real amount, and go down there, what will the FV be? What will actually happen with 3% investments? Alpha solve. Holy cow. They're totally underfunded by almost a third. Do you see it? That is what is facing you guys. It's going to be one of those things where it's going to start showing up in the news in maybe 5-10 years. Who would have ever thought? This is horrible. This is blindsiding. No one would have known this. Yeah, we know it now, and it's going to hit, and no one's going to deal with it until hell breaks loose. It already, Illinois, we're already facing the catastrophe. And what are they going to do? Well, when it hits in 10 years, they're going to have defined benefits that they paid the employees, the retirees. And so because you will still be working, they will have to put your payments into the plan through the roof. In order to correct the problem in 10 years, your payments into the plan will probably have to rise by 50 to 60, 70%. And it'll be on you because you'll be paying the deficit to keep those retirees getting their defined benefits that they were promised under contract. That's where this comes to real life for you. One last thing I want to show you. It's kind of a minor point, but it's actually also a little bit more important, too. You see, compounding of interest got popular years ago, many years ago, because the law, once the fiasco of the 1920s had turned into a rout, and you got reform in Congress and a lot of stronger regulations. One of the regulations that was put into place was that bank accounts couldn't promise the moon. The highest you could get on a passbook savings account under the Glass-Steagall Act was 5.25%. So that these scam artists couldn't be promising 100%, 500%, 38%. There was a limit. A ceiling, a price ceiling. Now, back in the day, interest rates were nowhere near that, so no one cared. But over time, into the 40s and 50s and 60s, the problem got to be a little bit difficult because banks were locked in. They could not offer more than 5.25%, but there were other quite safe investments that were going above 5.25%. And the banks were in kind of a little bit of a desperate situation. We've got this law that says we can't offer what these other financial institutions are offering because we're banks and we're under Glass-Steagall. That's when the era of compounding interest came in. It's just a trick. If I put in a certain amount of money in and I compound it once a year, suppose that I put in money at 5.25%. Number of compoundings per year, If it's just one, then the effective rate is still the same. But if I compound that money more often, in other words, I calculate the interest twice a year, every 6 months, it goes above. It slips a little above. And the more I compound every year, the more above 5.25% it becomes. Here's the formula for it. The effective rate, you just take 1 plus the annual rate, the APR, divided by the number of compoundings to the number of compoundings. That's all you do. Make sure you use parentheses and you use a scientific calculator. Watch this. Second quit. So if I have 1 compounding per year, I would simply do open parenthesis. How do I get parentheses? I can't get parentheses on this. Huh? Oh, I wonder if I can click it. You're right. Okay, 1. You're not supposed to use the mouse. It's not manly, man, to use the mouse. Okay, 0.0525 divided by 1, close the parenthesis, to the first power, and you get the same number, minus 1, and then you subtract 1 from it. I should have put that there, minus 1. But if I do it twice a year, and you can see it from there, 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 2, close the parentheses, raise it to the 2 power, minus 1, 5.32%. Do you see it? And every time you do it a little more, it nudges a little higher. It's like a sneaky way around, and it's allowed by law, and it gave the banks, and now it's just normal. Compoundings monthly, quarterly, whatever. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.